Back together again. You and I chatting it up Thursday, August 29th, 2024, right here on Connecticut Today. I opened the show with some thoughts on an offer from a Democratic State House member regarding a special session on recent electric bills. Only a Bridgeport.com blogger, Lenny Grimaldi, dropped by to talk about another controversy surrounding a Bridgeport government official. We also welcomed Joshua Leifer, author of Tablets Shattered, The End of an American Jewish Century and the Future of Jewish Life.
You know, I think in the long run, all this complaining and whining and moaning and finger pointing and screaming and yelling about the controversy now with these state electric bills, primarily from customers of the two biggest utilities, of course, Eversource and UI, this is going to be beneficial. Eventually, and I have been in agreement with many state legislators saying, all right, the whole idea, and I don't mean to bore you with this, but we have to set this up for some people who are not paying attention here. The whole idea of this special session to try and at least get the ball rolling as to figuring out the electrical situation here in the state and fixing it, it's political. I get it. I understand it. But nothing is really going to happen in the short term, and both sides know that. But it is illustrative of something that I have said, is that the Democrat majority in Hartford, at least in the Senate, because they haven't said anything, I don't think, but even a lot of folks in the House, there is an overt political atmosphere to this from the majority party, who says, nah, let the Republicans whine and bitch and moan all they want. We're not going to agree with anything on them. Now, I know what you're going to say. It's politics, Paul. Well, yes, Mr. and Mrs. America and all the ships at sea, yes, it is. But again, as I say all the time, it is politics coming from many of the people you vote for. See, again, I'll bring this to a point here in a moment, because there's a piece in the Hartford Current that made my eyes pop out of my head. I got them back in, but it was a little greasy to do that. Crisco worked well. But you have to understand, nothing is going to change. Like I say, nothing ever gets better in this state. It doesn't. Nothing ever gets better in this state. Name me one thing of any import that has saved you money in this state. Name me one thing that legislators have done in unanimity that has really solved a problem here, instead of the majority party saying, well, you know, and you have to understand, and this is not easy. No, we don't have to understand. Give you an example here of what I have observed. Now, I'm 63, and I started really following Connecticut politics as soon as I got my first job, 23, 24, out of college. I've been watching these people for 40 years, two generations. And this essay that was published in the Hartford Current today by a state legislator, this is one of the most perfect things that I have found that, in a nutshell, tells you what is wrong with this state. Even at a time where thousands of people, and by the way, this change.org petition is now up to almost 64,000 people. We may hit 100,000 in a few weeks, you don't know. But there are a lot of legislators in Hartford who simply don't care. You have to understand this. And when you understand this, you will make better choices, especially for you folks who vote with the majority, with the Democrats in Hartford. You have to understand something. A lot of those people couldn't give less of a crap if they tried as to what you think. It's up to 64,000 almost. But let me go to this Hartford Current editorial here. State lawmaker says, yes, let's have an honest Connecticut special session. So I'm saying to myself, okay, maybe there's starting to be a little movement here. And I'm reading here, and it is written by a Democratic legislator, Representative Christine Palm, and one of her pet projects, her pet areas of concern is climate change. All right, that's fine. She said, and she starts it with a quote. Now, follow along here. She starts this with a quote from a Republican lawmaker. And she quotes Representative Devin Carney, who said the path we're on is unsustainable and requires real cooperative bipartisan solutions. And she said, I couldn't agree more. But here comes the rub. And again, here comes the rub from the majority party. This is the attitude they have. Matt Ritter, Bob Duff, Christine Palm, Martin Looney. This is the attitude they have regarding your concern. She said, quote, there's just one problem. The Republican caucus refuses to acknowledge the climate crisis that has put us on this unsustainable path, and they refuse to work with Democrats on solutions to address it. She said, I too would welcome a special session, but only if my colleagues across the aisle agree to look seriously at HB 5004, the Connecticut Climate Protection Act. So here's what's going on. State Representative Christine Palm, I've never met the woman, I've never talked to her, I don't care. Because she put her ideas out there in the state's largest newspaper, so I can pretty much gauge here. She would welcome a special session, but only if the Republicans agree to look at climate change. See, this is a Democratic trick, and they do this all the time. This is why a lot of you folks get upset. Well, the Republicans have no real force in this state, and they don't unless they threaten to filibuster, which is the only thing they can do. Now, Representative Christine Palm could have come out and said, "Well, all right, let's listen. The environment is one of my pet projects, but this is bad. People want to know that we hear them. So let's talk about this for a few days, right? Let's talk about this for a few days." But no, she sets a precondition. And the precondition is she wants to look at HB 5004, the Connecticut Climate Protection Act, which every one of them voted against. Well, okay, Representative Palm, how many times has your caucus voted against something that the Republicans put up there? So, see, this is called a poison pill in political ponderance. In other words, hey, we'll get together with you on something if you just look at what we are concerned about. No, 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 no. Act like freaking adults, and I know that's tough for a lot of you folks in Hartford. Act like adults. And meet the Republicans halfway and say, hey, you know, we disagree on certain things, but let's at least, folks, what do I keep going back to? Let's at least tell people we hear you. But no, there are entrenched forces in Hartford. You know, you think Congress in the U.S. is intransigent? Do you know how intransigent things are in Hartford? How little actually gets done in Hartford? Because the dominant Democrats from the big cities, they as chairmen and chairpersons of the committees can choose which bills, which is the privilege of the majority. I understand that. They can choose which bills, you know, they're going to take a look at and which bills are not going to take a look at. So at this rate, do you understand me? Nothing is going to get done. Nothing. Because of who you vote for. And if you keep established Democrat majorities in Hartford, and yes, I understand part of the problem now is because some of the stuff was voted on a bipartisan way. I'm not walking away from that. But you know what? Right now, the majority of people who are ticked off with their electric bills, they don't care. Well, you know, in the past, no, no, forget the past. Move forward. As the late, great Hank Stram used to say, let's matriculate the ball down the field. He didn't talk about, you know, Len Dawson losing yardage there. He sat there with that giggling of his, go, let's keep matriculating the ball down the field. But there are too many people in the General Assembly with their own damn pet projects who, when they see a situation like this, they put a poison pill in it. And Christine Palm does this with, you know, with the environment. That's fine. But she has the entire, assuming she's going to run again or be reelected, I have no idea. But she's got the entire next session to roast the Republicans to and fro, back and forth, over the coals on that one. So now she should act like an adult, and everybody in the majority, or at least a majority of the majority, should act like an adult and say, all right, listen, we have our differences with the Republicans on this, but let's at least get together for a few days and agree to on some sort of broad outline of something, because you know what? That's what your employer's done. See, here's the problem. The Democratic majority in Hartford thinks they only represent Democrats. That's the problem. That's the problem. And on the Republican side, Republicans think they only represent Republicans, and that's the problem too. And you can do that on a national scale as well. The true measure of a public servant as to how good they are at what they do is not signing on to bills that are slam dunks, but trying to reach across the aisle and fixing things and not looking at everything as a political opportunity there. And again, I'm just asking this out loud. Maybe something has happened. I haven't seen it. I looked. Has there been an official response from the state Senate Democrats out there on this special session thing? I haven't seen it. Maybe there has been. If you've seen it, let me know. Folks, you have to understand that the predicament you're in now, looking at your bill, some of your bills are okay, some of the bills are a little higher, you can pay them, and some of you are picking your jaw up off the table. That is directly because, no matter whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, all right? That's not Eversource and UI saying we're going to charge this and we're going to put this on your bill and nobody stopping them. No. Do you understand there are people that okayed this? Pay attention. Pull your head out of Trump v. Kamala Harris for a few weeks. Pay attention to what is going on in Hartford. And stop voting for the same state house person or state rep for a person for the past 20 or 30 years. Oh, because they got the school I went to a new basketball rim. I mean, some of the ridiculous stuff that people marginalize their votes on is ridiculous. So State Rep Christine Palm, a Democrat, very influential, especially with the environmental cause, saying, yeah, but you know what? When we have a special session, if we have one, let's look at the environment bill. No, that's not necessary right now. It's not. But again, it's how things are done in Hartford when you have one party that decides whose voices are heard. Every 5:15 segment or so on every Thursday here brings us Lenny Grimaldi from onlyinbridgeport.com with the latest Park City buzz. And Lenny, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
What's cooking, Uncle Paulie? What's wrong with making up stories? It creates chaos. And we like yeah.
Fake news, Lenny. We don't want fake news. Have you called him recently? Have you called DJT recently or not?
I did pick up the phone, and then I got through about six numbers.
It stopped.
I stopped.
All right. Yeah, I get it. I understand. Yep. What is this headline? Alfredo Fettuccini creams Bridgeport taxpayers. Oh, man.
We've got to have a little fun Labor Day weekend, can't we?
So, yeah, I guess. So this is actually, it's Councilman Castillo, not Councilman Fettuccini, Please explain what's going on. I mean, we all know what's going on here, but go ahead. Give us the skinny anyway.
Yeah, so this is kind of an update follow-up we've talked about a little bit. You have City Councilman Alfredo Castillo, who's been on the council for a good more than a decade or so. He decided that he was going to send the taxes on his vehicles to the city of Shelton, mm-hmm. not the city of Bridgeport, where he lived, while sitting on the council and passing the budget, including the tax rate. Jeez. So $1,300 of his money that was supposed to go to city taxpayers in Bridgeport
yeah.
went to the city of Shelton. So the city of Shelton, interesting, the assessor there also works for Bridgeport. And one of the assistant assessors in Shelton noticed that the tax bill for Castillo was going to Bridgeport, not this residence in Shelton. He claimed his cars were being parked. They went over there. They didn't see any cars over there.
Oops.
Right? Noops. Oops is right. And so they, after an investigation, they determined they had four or five cars or so.
Yeah.
That they were, you know, he needs to be paying taxes in Bridgeport. So basically, he scalped taxpayers about $1,300 so far. And they are now they're saying, you've got to pay this.
Yeah.
You've got to pay this to the city of Bridgeport. And that's the latest. So the mill rate, you know, why was this going on? The mill rate on vehicles in Shelton, mm-hmm. the mill rate is low. The rate keeps taxes low there, right?
Yeah.
The mill rate is 19.18, just under 20 mil.
Yeah.
And in Bridgeport, it's capped at 32.46.
Sure.
So as a result of that, he was paying far less yeah. To the city of Shelton than it would be to Bridgeport. But also, you know, he probably saved a whole bunch of money on insurance.
Well, yeah. Well. Yeah, because where the cars are registered. Yeah. Now, Lenny, are they going to go back and see if he did this in previous years, or is this just a one-time thing here?
They're going to keep poking on this to see how far it goes. You know, why not? So.
You know, Lenny, it fascinates me. I used to work with a guy in radio who's still in the business where he's a different station now. But, you know, we'd be in a newsroom together or in a studio, and we'd read or hear this story. And he would always look at me and say, you know, kind of some version, Lenny, of, and you've probably heard this as well, what is he thinking? You're going to get caught. Eventually somebody is going to get caught. Or does somebody just not think that, Lenny?
Well, understand that this is also the city council member who got stopped by a Fairfield police officer last year.
Do you know who I am? Don't you know who I am?
Don't you know who I am? he's a city council member in Bridgeport, all right? You know, you could say BFD, right?
Yeah.
Or in the Stratford, and the Fairfield cops probably going, what?
Yeah.
It was Joe Gannon or Donald Trump he was pulling over, right?
No, but, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. There's an update here. And you know what, Lenny? Thank you, because I had completely forgotten about this story. The federal trial for Dennis Bradley and somebody else here has been reset for next May. Now, refresh us on that story. I finally remember it here, but he still faces a trial on this. What's going on with that?
Yeah, a lot of people have forgotten about it because it was delayed 2 years because of a battle over evidence between the prosecutors and the defense. So basically, Dennis Bradley was a state senator. He served two terms. And while he was running for the state Senate in 2018, he conducted an announcement at Dauphin's Cove in the East End.
Mm-hmm.
You know, basically, the government is alleging that Bradley and his treasurer in the case were both charged.
Yeah.
And they were charged with multiple counts of wire fraud for what they allege is leveraging his law firm and personal finances for the 2018 announcement in violation of campaign finance laws. So basically, the government said, he announced this thing as a party for his law firm.
Yeah,
so
I remember
free
that.
Food and free drink and
yeah.
free band and free everything. Well, actually, it was an announcement for state Senate, and he was raising money there.
Mm-hmm.
The problem for Bradley is he was trying to qualify for the Connecticut's public financing program, business election program. And so he was trying to, they're charging him, they tried to manipulate the program to achieve nearly $200,000 of public dollars, right? And then here's where it gets worse, right? The cover up. Then he prevailed upon underlings to falsify donation cards when the heat was turned up, right? So the government has a 30-minute video of this event, you know, which could be pretty damning.
Okay.
And the inclusion of it came late, according to the defense. The trial judge in the case said, no, you can't enter it, it's too late. And the government appealed it to the Second Circuit Court of Appeals in New York. And the appeals court sided with the government and said it has to be introduced. So 2 years later, here we are. Basically, I called it a reset because the government has to go back and interview all its witnesses again.
Sure.
And the defense has to kind of reset and do its defense, knowing now that they've got this 30-minute interview, I mean, 30-minute video that they didn't want in. They didn't want this in because I know it's pretty damaging to the defendant. So the judge reset the trial for sometime in May of 2025, and we'll see where it goes.
And so if this gets bad for Bradley, do you sense here that does this video now, Lenny, introduce the possibility of him, you know, looking for a plea deal here down the road, maybe, if it gets really sticky?
It certainly increases the odds.
Yeah.
It certainly increases the odds, for sure. Mm-hmm. You know, some people will, you know, his problem, and he's an attorney, right? And he still practices. He's still involved in city politics.
Yeah.
He supported Ernie Newton, who got, you know, blown out of the water by Harron Gaston in the primary a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's sticky for him because, you know, if he answers the plea, I don't see the government allowing the plea out on a misdemeanor. And if that, he might be able to keep his law license. So that's part of the problem with this.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, this would certainly turn up the odds of making this case much stronger for the government and give him, you know, some pause to say, hey, and if I cut my losses, you know, can I get out of this thing, you know, serving, you know, a minimum amount of time or a year or two, something like that. And Jessica Martinez, who's a former school board member, she too was charged with wire fraud, but she was also charged with providing false information to a grand jury. So she's got an extra charge against her in that level.
Wow. Lenny, finally, you have a story here about there is a Republican running in the 22nd District State Senate race, a gentleman named Chris Corina, 31 years old. What's he about?
Yeah, he's a young guy, young family guy. You know, the 22nd Senatorial is a place where the Republicans try to become, competitive. It's been more difficult because of the configuration of the district. Which is heavily Bridgeport, but all of Trumbull and a portion of Monroe. He's got a nice story to tell, immigrant story to tell. His mom's from Bridgeport. He's a realtor by profession. His father were a West African immigrant. They have a three-year-old. He's a realtor in Bridgeport, but raises his family in Trumbull. He's new to the game. He hasn't really run for anything in the past. So it's kind of a newer, fresh face. For the Republicans to put out there.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't come across as a flamethrower at all. You know, he's talking about issues, right? And he's going to be challenging the Democrats to draft the Gadkar Wilcox, who's the university professor at the Quinnipiac Law School. And she defeated the three men in a four-way primary, and she won that handily. And she's so basically a two Trumbull residents going head-to-head.
Interesting. And finally, speaking of flamethrowing, your old boss here, you know, Lenny, the polls are kind of all over the place. I mean, there was a new Fox poll. It's got Kamala Harris doing better. A Quinnipiac poll came out today, says basically it's still a statistical tie. Nate Silver from 538 said, hey, I still think Trump wins by the trends I'm seeing. What are your thoughts on all this?
So I was looking at the aggregate. The national polls are about, she's up by 4 points. We add all of them up, right? Mm-hmm. But again, we've talked about this. We don't let their president through. She's going to win the popular vote.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think there's any doubt.
Yeah, no,
but
no doubt.
Although he says he did twice, but he didn't twice, you know?
Yeah.
But she's going to win the popular vote. But again, but his problem is this. She's doing better much better than Biden in the Sun Belt states.
Yeah.
Right? And now you look at a place like Florida, which is 4 or 5 points, which means he's going to have to start spending extra money than he really would count on if these polls hold. Well, I think Trump's going to win Florida, of course. I think he's going to win Texas, of course. But she's starting to penetrate in some of these areas she wasn't expect to be competitive. But when you're looking at, you know, the Midwest and the Sun Belt states,
yeah,
she's leading them, you know, by a couple of points. It could be one. It could be 3 points. Still close. But compared to where Biden was, where, yeah, you know, Trump had probably a 3 to 5 point lead,
yeah,
overall in the Sun Belt and the Midwest, where she's ahead now. And she came out of that convention, you know, pretty good. And I don't think the next flashpoint is going to be the debate.
Sure.
You know, we're going to see, I don't think we're going to see much in the way of changing in the polls. I think, mm-hmm, she's going to be ahead for a while. But, you know, he's going to have to figure out something in that next debate to change the course of these polls.
Absolutely. Lenny Grimaldi, the guy, the website onlyinbridgeport.com. And Lenny, thanks. Have a happy weekend. Good Labor Day weekend. We'll talk next week, my friend. Thank you.
Thanks.
All right, Lenny Grimaldi, onlyinbridgeport.com, a guy who used to work for Donald J. Trump. Our next guest is a journalist, editor, and translator. His essays and reporting appearing widely in international publications, including the New York Review of Books, the New York Times, the Guardian, the New Statesman, Haaretz, the Nation, and elsewhere. And by the way, he is currently pursuing a PhD at Yale University in New Haven, where his research focuses on the history of modern moral and social thought. We welcome to WICC Joshua Leifer. The name of the book, Tablets Shattered, The End of an American Jewish Century and the Future of Jewish Life. Hey, Joshua, it's Paul. How are you?
Great. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Fabulous. And Joshua, just let me check. I don't want to butcher your last name. Did I get it right or not?
It's actually Leifer, like life in prison.
Got it. Oh, don't say that now. We don't want to do that. Joshua Leifer. And you're currently at Yale. I'm a New Haven born and bred guy. How do you like the Elm City?
It's amazing. You know, great nature, great, mm-hmm, running routes.
Yeah.
It's pretty good food, too.
Cool. We like the food. Tablets Shattered, The End of an American Jewish Century and the Future of Jewish Life. That sounds pretty heavy, Joshua. For my listeners, especially those of the Jewish faith listening right now, kind of break that down. What made you write this, and what's the point of the book?
Sure. I mean, broadly speaking, the book was an attempt to understand how we got to where we are right now with a huge amount of political polarization around Israel and the war in Gaza, to understand also kind of the backdrop of rising anti-Semitism, also how politics have changed in American Jewish life and American life more broadly during the last, I guess, almost a decade or so, that, mm-hmm, politics has been super polarized. So I wanted to take stock of all of those changes.
From a broad, let's do the macro first on this, Joshua, before we do the micro. From a broad macro kind of 1,000-mile view, looking at it from a distance, and we'll break it down further in a moment, how did that happen? Was it a 5, 10, 15, 20, 30-year thing to where we are now? Were there currents in culture and in politics, you know, kind of bubbling to the surface years ago that we didn't see or not?
I don't know if it's that we didn't see them, but it certainly was a long process. What the book charts is the development of what people call the American Jewish consensus, an idea of what it means to be Jewish that centered around, that put Israel, the state of Israel, front and center, and also a certain idea of America and also a certain idea of liberalism. And basically that consensus crystallized after World War II. It kind of hardened in a certain way after Israel's victory in the Six-Day War, and, mm-hmm, then its near defeat in the 1973 Yom Kippur War. And then kind of fast forward to the 2000s, it began to unravel as the reality on the ground in Israel-Palestine and also changes in American life kind of made their force felt. I think there were a lot of subterranean forces in terms of discontent and inequality, and also in Israel-Palestine, of course, the occupation of the West Bank and the siege of Gaza, that all kind of came to a head in the 2010s. And now, you know, I think we're maybe at the peak of the crisis of all of that.
Yeah, I like everybody else in the media, Joshua, and the guest is Joshua Leifer, Tablet Shattered, The End of an American Jewish Century and the Future of Jewish Life. That's the book. You know, Joshua, a lot of us in the media look at this and we can understand, and I can see the different factions and the different thoughts people may have on this. But, and again, this is only personally for me. And when I try to talk about this on the show, I have people like you on and other experts because I'm woefully inadequate at discussing this. But the thing that I urge people to understand is that Israel and the Jewish people, I guess, Joshua, on a daily basis, there is some overarching wariness about, will we get attacked today or will something happen to us today? And I don't think, Joshua, no matter what side people are on like this, unless you live that's very hard for the common person to understand, right? Unless you live that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think one of the things that has come through over the last, certainly over the last year, but was even simmering before then, it was just a return of anti-Semitism to American political life. And one of the things the book charts is that when American Jewish immigrants from Central and Eastern Europe arrived in the U.S. in the early 20th century, they found a country that was super different from mm-hmm. what they had known in the old, in Europe. It was a country that was freer, that was more equal, where there wasn't institutional anti-Semitism. And for a long time, people would say, you know, America's different. The Holocaust, of course, also made America seem more different compared to Europe, where the most horrific acts were committed. But then beginning, you know, sometime in the 2010s, anti-Semitism began to reappear in American politics, with major politicians using Jews as symbols and dog whistles in different ways. And I think, you know, in 2020, before the pandemic, there was a rash of anti-Semitic attacks in Brooklyn and also in upstate New York. Mm-hmm. And there was a big march. There was a big march in January of 2020. And maybe some of those fears were kind of supplanted by the craziness of the COVID years. But, you know, that fear never went away. I mean, it's palpable wherever you go. If you go to synagogue and you have to pass through armed guards, and you know, I have relatives who mm-hmm. you know, are afraid of walking on the street sometimes because out of fear that they might be attacked. And I think there's no way to understand the current political climate without understanding the huge amount of vulnerability that American Jews are experiencing.
What did you, Joshua Leifer, what were your feelings? What were you feeling inside in your head and your heart when you saw the sorts of things last year that sadly, I guess, are starting up again slowly this year, you know, at Columbia and at some of these schools and at UCLA and other schools? What were you feeling when you saw that?
You know, my feelings are complicated about all this because I think there's no way to look at what's happening in Gaza, at the humanitarian catastrophe there, at the civilians being killed and the huge amount of carnage without feeling like this has to stop, like this must end. And then on the other hand, you know, there's a huge amount of rhetorical excess and a belief that no arrangement of Israel is legitimate. Mm. And, you know, it's really demoralizing because I think we have to be able to hold on to the humanity of both people. You know, opening one's eyes to the dehumanization of Palestinians doesn't require closing one's eyes to the dehumanization of Israelis. But yep. In the kind of political climate that we're in, it's just so hard for a lot of people to hold on to that line.
And yet the frustrating thing that I always mention on this program, Joshua, is that if people really did their work, really did their honest due diligence of just being a smart news consumer, you know, Israel is one of the most open and, if not the most open and freest country in the Middle East, where Palestinians and Jews and Arabs and other ethnic minorities, people don't realize this, Joshua. How many hundreds of thousands of non-Jews actually work in Israel every day and conduct business and have friends across ethnic lines? But sadly, you know, the media and the powers that be on both sides, they won't emphasize that, or if they do, it's very hard to find.
Yeah, I mean, I think part of the challenge is that the reality is complicated. It's certainly the case that Palestinian citizens of Israel can vote in elections and work, and there are flourishing communities, even if some people experience discrimination. But then on the other hand, in the occupied territories, on the other side of mm-hmm. what people call the green line, you have millions of Palestinians who live under Israeli military rule, where they can't vote and don't have the ability to sort of determine their own fates. And part of what the complexity of this situation is that both, you know, people on the extreme left and people on the extreme right are trying to blur the distinctions between these two realities, between what's happening in the occupied West Bank and between Israel proper, which is not to say that Israel proper is perfect. No country is perfect. No country was mm-hmm. it was founded in a perfect way. But, you know, the green line is internationally recognized armistice line that were drawn after the war in 1967. And one of the frustrations is just that it's being erased in the discourse on both the far right and the far left.
Mm-hmm. Joshua, how accurate is this? I interviewed years ago a couple of Jewish or Israeli political scientists, and I remember one of them said something like this to me, and because we were talking about the attitudes at the time of Palestinians and Jews and everything, and I remember he said something like, "Paul, young folks in Israel proper are kind of brought up and are kind of," he didn't want to use the word indoctrinated, "but they are told earlier of all the struggles of the country. So you have this innate fear that is built into them. And that fuels," in his mind, Joshua, "it fuels some of the hard line that goes on in Israel. And that kind of tends to soften as they get older. It's kind of the polar opposite here in the U.S., where a lot of folks are born on the liberal or progressive side, and they change as they get older." What are your thoughts on that, as the way young people in Israel, and for that matter, in Palestine, are indoctrinated or taught about this from a young age?
I think that's basically right. Israel is one of the countries where the people who are younger pull more right wing than their older counterparts. It's true in other countries in Europe, like France is a good example of this too, where young people tend to be sometimes more right wing than the older generations. You know, I think that part of what happened is that if you're my age and you are an Israeli, I'm 30, you have memories of the Second Intifada, when buses were blowing up in the streets of Jerusalem and Tel Aviv. And you know, I didn't live there at that time, although I lived in Israel for a couple of years. And, you know, I can only imagine the kind of fear that it must have been like to walk mm-hmm. out of your house and not know when you get on the bus if you're going to come back to school. And it's very worrying, you know, to me, the statistics, because it's not just right wing. You know, sometimes there's been recent polls showing that younger Israelis are less committed to democracy, less committed to civil rights. And, you know, it's a fight that it's going to be a really hard fight to try to undo some of the swing that's happened against the backdrop mm-hmm. of all of this violence.
And Joshua, finally, I see a note here from your publisher. You have a New Haven event. What's September 17th at the Slifka Center for Jewish Life at Yale? Tell us about that.
That's right. I'm going to be at the Slifka Center. I think with another journalist. I believe hopefully with Mark Oppenheimer, mm-hmm. and we'll be talking about the book, about journalism, Jewish politics, some of the challenges facing American Jewish life right now, you know, books will be on sale, and it's open to the public, and we'd love to, you know, hear people's thoughts, mm-hmm. hear their questions. really get a sense of what people are thinking in this moment.
Fabulous. Name of the book, Tablets Shattered, The End of an American Jewish Century and the Future of Jewish Life. Joshua Leifer, currently studying at Yale. Hey, Joshua, thank you. Been really good, really entertaining, very informative, and we hope to chat down the road. Thank you, sir.
Thank you so much for having me.
Appreciate it.
Great to talk
Thanks.
To you.
Appreciate it. Joshua Leifer, again, he'll be at the Slifka Jewish Center at Yale coming up on September the 17th. Thanks, Joshua. Good luck.